This episode of the Inner Hoa Uprising is also available for your viewing pleasures on YouTube. If looking at people while they podcast is your thing, then you can click the link in our show notes to watch along on YouTube. Also, this episode of the Inner Hoa Uprising is sponsored by you. That's right, you. All of your Patreon donations, PayPal donations, 5-star reviews on Apple and Stitcher, shoutouts on social media, articles, mentions to your friends, IHU merchandise purchases, all make the show possible. Week in and week out, and for that we thank you, homies. Welcome to the Inner Hoa Uprising, a podcast about sex, love, and dating from the perspective of me, Sam, one black, non-monogamous, pansexual feminist hoe who lives in New York City, is still socially distancing, and is still down for the resistance. My pronouns are she and her.
And Rob, one agender pansexual feminist with a fatty, pronouns they, them, and plant daddy.
Nice. You know what that means? That means you're like 2 out of the 4 avatar states. So you have earth with the plants.
And my pussy wet. Water.
You know what? I thought about that and I was like, let me not go that deep into this territory right now. But here we are.
I'll be waterbending that pussy. Anyway.
Okay. Well, what happens after that? Yes. Every episode of the Inner Hoa Uprising works like this. Myself and my lovely rotating co-host talk about sex, love, and dating as it pertains to current events in the world, our lives, and yours. And occasionally we hit you with interviews with insightful folks or deep dive episodes into a topic of our choice. We're doing one of those today. And sometimes we talk about waterbending. That there's so much this episode could be about, and it's like, is that the title? Did we make the title already?
We'll see.
Yeah.
Who knows bend that pussy. Happen. They're gonna be like, this is not what the episode is about.
Like at all.
I'm disappointed.
This episode, we are celebrating recent wins in the Black, trans, and queer community and shouting out the folks who made them possible. We're doing a deep dive on the concept of hypersexuality. We're talking about normalizing consent and boundaries in casual dating. We're doing a quick holding Twitter accountable moment. We're saying no to dating people who we don't vibe with, plus a review of season 2 of the Netflix series Dating Around.
And if you would like to follow along with the conversations had in this podcast on social media, you can do so by using the hashtag Inner Hoa Uprising so we can see it, and the hashtag pod in so other people could see it. And if you would like to follow us on social media, you can do so at Inner Hoa Uprising without the G on Twitter, Inner Hoa Uprising with the G on Instagram and Facebook. You can join our Facebook group by searching Inner Hoa Uprising Community. That's CUMUNITY. And you can. It's never gonna stop.
You forgot the other M because you wanted to say that so bad.
I thought my fault. Let me back up because I have to say the whole thing now because you might type it in wrong. You can join our Facebook group by searching Inner Hoa Uprising CUMUNITY.
I also feel like you backed up just so you could do the UNITY.
So the fuck is, you got a problem with that shit?
Fucking Rob Latifa over here.
I love it. Rob, don't do that because I don't need any more names. You can also head to innerhoauprising.com to sign up for weekly goodies via our newsletter, to pay a hoe, or to check out merchandise.
Mm-hmm. And I want to do a quick note and say that if you follow us on Instagram, you can watch our Instagram live shows, which is an hour long show that we do before we record every episode. And it's always like a good time. This past week, we talked about very, very wimpy law enforcement, very, very wimpy government officials, dog poop, and concepts of race and gender as a child. You'll find out whose poop it was if you watch.
They're trying to blame me.
Anyway, if you want to pay us to speak virtually at your school or conference about sex positivity, Black feminism, podcasting, or other kinds of topics we discuss on this here show, or to host a consent, pleasure, or dating virtual workshop for your organization, we would love to. So to book us, you can send us a line to ihupodcast@gmail.com. Also, if you want to hit us up for some social media opportunities, we're down with the vibes too. ihupodcast@gmail.com. Now we're going to get into Hoes of the Week. That is our segment where we shout out homies who have supported IHU in the past week. Hoes of the Week get special nicknames. That's IHU tradition. And the game, if they choose to participate, is that they can guess the meaning behind their nickname, which is very fun. All right, so some Hoes of the Week this week are Tell All, whose real name is Sean, who paid a hoe on PayPal. Then we got Curvingin, who I'm just naming Curve Gotti. We got Anika M. Oh my God, I can't believe I didn't give Anika a nickname. Shit. You know what? I'll tell the backstory behind this.
Okay.
I was going to do like a nigga.
Yo, honestly, I was thinking like a nigga. Like, but you know, I, like back in the day, like nooka. Like,
yeah, niggas used to say it like that or type it like that. And I was like, I don't know if Anika is a Black person, so I don't think that this is appropriate.
Yeah, that'd be awkward.
Anika, let us know who you are. And if you are Black, it'll remain. And if it's not,
we have to change it to something.
Anika paid a hoe and left a very nice note that said, y'all are the best teachers I've ever had. And that was really sweet. So thank you, Anika. Shout out to Kelsey, a.k.a. Kels, who became a patron on Patreon. Shout out to Sade P, a.k.a. Sweetest
Taboo,
who became a patron on Patreon. I believe this is like a brand name, but shout out to Art Trash and Treasures, who paid a hoe. No nickname, because I do not know what your actual name is. Shout out to Ash G, a.k.a. Gotta Catch 'Em All, of course. I'm not sure if that's the same Ash from Ray and Ash, the couple. We have two Inner Hoe Uprising couples here, and I really enjoy both of them. So I don't know if that's the same Ash. But either way, thank you, Ash, who became a patron on Patreon. Shout out to Suze, whose real name is Susan L, who became a patron on Patreon. Shout out to Summer, a.k.a. Summer Breeze, who became a patron on Patreon. Shout out to Sid M, aka Ice Age, who increased their Patreon pledge. Shout out to Kaya, who last week you got my neck, my back, and you're back at it again.
Yeah.
Full name being my pussy and my crack, who became a patron on Patreon. We got Dre J, whose nickname is They Forgot About Dre, or motherfuckers forgot about Dre, who
became a patron. Yeah, just do a dirty version. I don't want you cleaned it up.
Nowadays, everybody want to talk like you got something to say. Like, that's your full name. Anyway, shout out to Double D, whose real name is Eddie R, who became a patron on Patreon. Shout out to Marble, whose real name is Dimitri, who increased his Patreon pledge. Shout out to Callie, whose nickname is Road Trippin, who became a patron on Patreon, left a super hefty pledge, and wrote us a kind message, and I'll read it. Hello, beautiful souls at Inner Hoe Uprising. Thank you so much for your work on this incredible podcast. My name is Callie. Callie recently came across Inner Hoe Uprising via Instagram. And she writes, I am a sex worker myself, currently listening to your most recent episode, Black Sex Workers Lives Matter, on a road trip with two other queer/pan sex workers. The three of us were hooked from the hilarious description of our problematic ass floating rock, and we'll be binging the fuck out of your other episodes. Thank you so much for providing so much brilliant and practical information on so many great topics like what it means to decriminalize sex work and how to be better allies to our marginalized communities. Y'all are brilliant and hilarious, and we can't wait to listen and watch all of your amazing content. Thank you. Love and blessings, Callie and the Abyssian Union. That was really sweet. Thank you,
that
Callie.
That is super duper sweet.
Yeah. Callie was on Patreon Live yesterday and was just in the car. And I didn't read this message before, so now I realize that was the road trip. I'm like, oh shit, I got to see it live. That's so nice.
You were part of the road trip.
Yes, for that 1 hour. Also, shout out to our Apple Podcast reviewers. This week we got Monica, a.k.a. Celis, Albi, a.k.a. Albi Shore, Stasia, a.k.a. Stace, and Jupe Jupe, who didn't leave a real name. So your nickname will be Jupe Jupe for now. But all the reviews were so nice, but Jupe Jupe's review was just, these motherfuckers be spitting.
Yes,
that is actually an adequate description of our podcast.
It is.
Thank you so much, Jupe Jupe.
Yes, thank you, Juju. And last but not least, shout out to our Patreon livers. This week we had Martini, Tawiwi, Marble, and Callie on her road trip. And it was really fun this week. We read a very queer Caribbean story, and we learned the extremely cute backstory of Martina and Tawana's love. So We're definitely going to do more readings of stories on Patreon Live. So hope you guys can join with that. That was really sweet.
Love it.
Yeah, it was also a really like graphic story. It was a lot of like, it was a lot of fingers going in and out of pum-pums because it was curving, so.
Yeah, I mean.
A lot of boobies, aka titties. It was nice.
I'm here for it.
If you would like to be a hoe of the week and get a cool nickname yourself, here are some things that you can do. You can leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. You can feature us in an article you've written or shout us out on social media. These are some non-monetary ways you can support us. We love monetary and non-monetary support, and we understand that in these uncertain times, monetary support is not feasible for many folks. So please do not spend your last dollars on us. Put you and yours first. But if you can spare some change, you can donate to us on PayPal at paypal.me/innerho. You can become a patron on Patreon by going to patreon.com/innerhouprising, or you can purchase some merchandise at innerhouprising.com/merchandise, the links to which are in the show notes. And a reminder that if you do become a patron on Patreon, for $2 a month, you can participate in things like our Slack chat, our patron-only film nights, and for $5 a month, you can join our bi-weekly Monday night Zoom hangouts, like the one I was just talking about. And at any patron tier, you actually receive access to our episodes a few days early and entry to our workshops and parties. Now we're going to do Bay of the Week.
Let's get it. There are
many people to shout out this week. Numerous.
It's all you, boo-boo.
The Bays of the Week this week are actually everyone who contributed, all the Black trans people who contributed to the movement for Black trans lives. So first up, we're going to talk about the organizers and speakers of Brooklyn Liberation and Action for Trans Lives. So that was a rally and a march that occurred in Brooklyn over the weekend in response to the widespread violence inflicted upon Black trans people. That includes the epidemic of violence towards Black trans women, often at the hands of Black cis men, a lack of urgent response by the state to investigate killings and brutalizations, and police killings of Black trans people and carceral abuse of Black trans people. So this action came on the heels of some really fucked up shit, and I want to give a content warning for mentions of violence towards trans people. So check the time code in the show notes to skip past all of the fuckery, because there is much fuckery. So this past week, or within the past couple of weeks or so, there were the horrific murders of Dominique Remy Fells and Raya Milton, two Black trans women. The police killing of Tony McDade, a Black trans man in Tallahassee, that has not seen nearly as much attention as other recent police killings of Black people. The beating of Ayanna Dior at the hands of several cis men and women. I think that happened in Minneapolis and it was caught on video and someone thought it was a good idea to actually upload that. The Trump administration recently reversing Obama era transgender health protections, and the fact that last year a woman named Laylene Polanco was put into solitary confinement on Rikers Island on a sex working charge. She was denied access to her seizure medication in solitary and she died. And recently, I think it was last week, the Bronx district attorney found no criminality in that. And you can listen to our latest episode to gain more clarity on how the criminalization of sex work is particularly harmful to Black trans women. The link to that episode, Black Sex Workers Lives Matter, will be in the show notes. So all of that being said, it's just a very heartbreaking week, but also a very heartbreaking several years, several decades, probably since the existence of the country. Heartbreak. Mm-hmm. So seeing so many people galvanize and show up to that march and shut the fuck up and listen. And by shut the fuck up, I mean cis people and non-Black people. And listen to the atrocities that Black trans people have been trying to tell cis and non-Black people about for decades was really, really hopeful to see. Did you see any of those images?
I did.
How do they make you feel?
They made me feel like Black trans people might be seen just a little bit more. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Not very.
Gave me a little hope, but you know, history.
I understand that. So I want to say much love to the Ochre Project, Marsha P. Johnson Institute, For the Girls, Glitz, Black Trans Femmes in the Arts, as well as speakers Raquel Willis, who is an IHU alum. You can definitely check out her episode. I'll link that in the show notes. Cheyenne Dorishow, Ayanne Field Stewart, Junior Mint, Joshua Obawole, and the family of Laylene Polanco. And I will link to the Brooklyn Liberation website in the show notes, where you can find the name names and social media ads of everyone who I've just mentioned. And if you're cis and non-Black and you attended that march, or that march woke you up to the atrocities that Black trans people have been facing for decades in this country, you might be wondering what's next. So my new quote this year, I mentioned this to Rodeca on a different episode, but I don't think I've mentioned it yet to you, Rob, is that I'm trying to live by, because I feel like every year I have a new thing. Like last year was like, no, Melis, 2019 or whatever.
And you were the only one living by that shit.
My new thing is just like present information and present what to do with it. So I recently watched Sorry to Bother You, and there was a quote by one of the characters that said, if you get shown a problem but you have no idea how to control it, then you just decide to get used to the problem. And I think that that's absolutely true. And some irony in that is that the director of that film, Boots Riley, was recently on a Instagram Live with No Name. And he was like, yes, I have posted about Black trans women. And it was like, okay, is that all you're doing? Like, No Name was like, oh, you have to get active. And he was like, yes, I have posted. So it's like, maybe you should take your own advice. Mm-hmm. So now I want to share a really handy resource document that lays out the many layers of this problem, provides a list of actionable items that you, who is listening and watching, can engage with. So that includes petitions, phone zaps, rallies, organizations you can support financially or with volunteer efforts, and media you can engage with to deepen your understanding of this deep-seated epidemic affecting Black trans folks. So the resource document is called Actions for Solidarity, hashtag Black Trans Lives Matter. And it was created with the oversight of Janet Mock, Raquel Willis, Nala Toussaint, and support from David Johns. And labor was provided in solidarity by Brittany Packnett Cunningham, Sarah Sophia Flicker, Alyssa Klein, and Philip Picardi. And the people who created that document are also my Bays of the Week this week. The link to that document will be featured in the show notes for this episode, so please engage with it. And if and when you do, let us know how you're getting active. Shoot us an email or hit us up on social media by using the hashtag InnerHoUprising. Last but certainly not least, in some very heartening news, the Supreme Court of the United States has ruled that sexual orientation and gender identity are protected characteristics under Title VII of the Civil Rights Act. Essentially protecting LGBT employees against being fired for being LGB or T. I think that's really amazing, and this could not have happened without the efforts of a trans woman named Amy Stevens, who filed a lawsuit that ultimately resulted in this SCOTUS decision. She unfortunately passed away a month ago. And also Amy's lawyer, Chase Strangio, a lawyer and transgender rights activist and a staff attorney at the ACLU who fought to make this happen. And also all of the Black trans women and men and non-binary folk activists who have been fighting for this for years. Everybody who put their effort into making this happen are also my Bays of the Week. To learn more about Amy Stevens, I would encourage you to check out our friends over at Marsha's Plate podcast and their episode Are We Still Whoopin', the link to which will also be in the show notes for this episode.
Those are some great Bays of the Week for I'm like awe. And it's also very sad that in 2020 that was passed. It's like sometimes you forget how far back we are. It's very interesting to remember, like, oh yeah, no, you niggas are just now getting rights. Like,
it's a fucked up place. But you know what's not a fucked up place? These virtual events that are happening, because they are committed to dismantling white cishet patriarchy and capitalism. So on June 18th, in a few days from now, our friends over at Bag Ladies Podcast are doing an Undoing Anti-Blackness workshop for folks who need some necessary assistance working through that bullshit. For those who don't know, Bag Ladies is a podcast hosted by Lena and Estefany, who are two Dominican Afro-Latinx podcasters who talk about news, politics, and baggage, plus they're mad smart and mad funny. And RSVP is required for this event, and the link to RSVP will be in the show notes for this episode. And then on June 19th, our friends at Tea with Queen and Jay podcast are throwing a Black Ass virtual party in celebration of Juneteenth. If you're unaware, Juneteenth is an American holiday that commemorates June 19th, 1865, which was the day of emancipation of the last remaining enslaved African Americans in the U.S., in Texas specifically. Mm-hmm. To commemorate the day, Tea with Queen and Jay is holding their annual kickback, but on the web this time to slow the spread of the coronavirus, filled with a Black ass good time. So there's a lot in store, including but not limited to fun and insightful guests, a comedian, music, and Black girl show and tell. Plus, Rob is going to be there talking about plants.
You love them.
what are you doing with plants? You telling us how to fucking cultivate greenery?
Yeah.
In our households and shit?
Yeah. Oof. But I'll tell you.
Long story short, come the fuck through to that. The event will be June 19th, 9 p.m. Eastern to 11 p.m. Eastern. And an Eventbrite link for you to RSVP will be in the show notes. Now we're going into a segment that we like to call Fuck It. It is typically our topic of the day, and today we're getting into the guts of what hypersexuality means, and we're taking a conversation that seems to be prevalent on Twitter as Twitter fodder, as quick little snippets, and we're going in depth into it because that's what we do here. We like to go in depth into things.
So we're talking about hypersexuality. I was inspired to research and really think about this from a clinical and critical perspective because I know what I know from understanding addiction, like addiction as a whole, and what I learned was too much growing up. Like, if you masturbate, you're gonna go blind. So I felt like in this new space that I'm in, as being a part of this podcast, as being more of a sex educator, and, you know, just being all around more aware of different things, I felt like I can actually take on this concept and really dismantle it and figure out what this all truly means. So what is hypersexuality? So hypersexuality, also called sex addiction, addiction, compulsive sexual behavior, or hypersexual disorder. So even in the beginning, you see how these words are all interchangeable, but they definitely should not be interchangeable. It's defined by Mayo Clinic as excessive preoccupation with sexual fantasies, urges, or behaviors that are difficult to control, causes you distress, or negatively affects your health, job, relationships, or other parts of your life. It sounds a lot like romance addiction, but any addiction means like there's a thing that's out of control, a thing that you find yourself unable to control without help.
For more on romance addiction, you can check out our episode, Might As Well Face It, You're Addicted to Love, in which Rob did a very good deep dive on romance addiction.
Yes, we out here diving into addictions now. So what kind of sexual behaviors are like considered in this spectrum? So masturbation, cyber sex, multiple sex partners, paying for sex, and using pornography. And these are all healthy sexual behaviors, but it's when they become destructive or destructive is when the excessiveness begins.
I think you said destructive twice.
I said destructive. Oh, okay. Destructive. Well, disruptive or destructive. If it disrupts your life or it actually begins to destroy it, that's when, you know, they're a problem probably exists. Hyper, it's a prefix of Greek origin meaning over. So that implies excess. So one of my think thoughts was, if there's hyper, is there a hypo, like under? And this is where societal norms can get fuzzy. Mm. All right, so let's just get into some quick causes. And of course you have biological causes, genetics, that predisposition to sensation seeking behavior. So that's what one would call like an addictive personality. But also know that it's just a predisposition. Any addiction is still more of a personal thing. You can have that predisposition and not have any kind of addiction.
Wide array of factors.
Yes.
Go into a manifestation, yes, of an addiction. And absolutely, also like a lot of things that you might be genetically predisposed to.
Exactly.
It really do be nature and nurture out.
It really do be nature and nurture 100%. Like, you can't just say, oh, it's just my genes, because there's a lot, it's environment, it's parents, it's just everything. Mm-hmm. But that still could predispose you to have like a sex addiction. Hormones, increase in estrogen or testosterone may play a role in hypersexuality. And I remember a trans man telling me that taking testosterone made him like super duper horny, but he never said it was ever to the point of like, I couldn't control it. Like, it was excessive.
chemical imbalance, our faves, norepinephrine, dopamine, serotonin making its way back because these babies regulate our moods. Increases in these hormones may increase sexual behaviors, which is like, I mean, if you feel good, you be fucking. I don't know. Why not?
It's very true.
If you feel bad, do you really be fucking? Like, typically you don't be feeling, you be fucking. And your brain, just your brain. A million different brain things can change neural circuits and cause changes. And the more intense an addiction is, the harder it is to get rid of. So if you, that's just in general with addiction. So if you have a super duper hardcore sexual addiction, it's going to take a lot longer for you to get rid of it than if it was a minimal sex addiction, which is, what the fuck is that even?
Greetings, everybody. I have a minimal sex addiction.
It's like, I'm like kind of addicted to sex. I just be fucking. I have one partner. So psychological. So some people use sex as a coping mechanism. And the more issues you have, then the more sex you have, if that is your coping mechanism. Mental disorders, especially those like bipolar disorder, are linked with engaging in risky or excessive sexual behavior, especially during manic episode. Trauma is related to hypersexuality. That is the statement. However, I also think quitter. What was that? I keep saying keep Quibla things pop on my Twitter.
Quibi?
Quibi, yeah, there you go. And I just like put it together. It was weird. But anyway, I think Twitter often equates sexual trauma to hypersexuality. So if you type in hypersexuality into like the search bar on Twitter, most of the tweets have hypersexuality and trauma in the same tweet. Mm-hmm. And they're usually really short tweets. Like, we don't talk about hypersexuality and trauma. We never talk about hypersexuality and trauma. They're not tweets with any information. And then there'll be the occasional...
Are any tweets with any information?
Yeah, because we be tweeting with information.
No, I know. I'm just making fun of people.
Okay. Well, you also making fun of me because I definitely do tweet without information. I just be putting shit out there. Like, this nigga don't need ass. But
yeah, but that's not making a statement about a very like two very serious things potentially,
like connecting things, that not to say that they don't have a connection, but you're just like putting something out there without saying context. Anything else.
Yeah,
like you gotta have context. So this right now, essentially this episode is me trying to give you guys context, because mm-hmm. occasionally like the tweets do say and that's true, that hypersexuality and mania isn't talked about enough. That is an understudied part of mania, but mm-hmm. it is definitely a big part of mania. Yeah, I don't like 100% agree with the sentiment that hypersexuality equals trauma. Like, that's the only stem. Obviously, we just went through all of these other things, and trauma was the one last one that was mentioned. It may or may not be a factor. Not everybody who has a sexual addiction has had a traumatic event happen to them. Mm-hmm. And not everybody who's had a traumatic event happen to them has sexual addiction. That's right. The point that I'm trying to make, that you can break, those things can be separate. It doesn't discount that trauma can lead to hypersexuality. It's just, it seems like amongst social media losers, God.
We're just dragging Twitter for no reason today.
It's like my mouth it's really saying what it wants to say.
Oh my goodness. No, amongst social media users, other causes are often overlooked. And also, I think that when I do like read these tweets and like really deep dive into these tweets, I feel like Twitter users sometimes also equate early sexuality with hypersexuality. And by early sexuality, I mean just like a natural, like when you're younger, like exploring your body, mm-hmm. masturbation, using a mirror. I know I was mirroring up trying to figure out what the fuck is going on.
I did used to pee? Do that a lot too. Yeah.
Like, where does the pee come from? Never saw the pee hole. But I knew I didn't piss out my vagina. Like, you know. Like,
if you're not on YouTube, you can't see Rob kind of like squaring up with the mirror is how I would describe it. Like, so where is it? So what's up? Like,
so you're not going to tell me?
As if the mirror is going to be like, ah, yes, well, if you look here.
Yeah. Early sexuality is healthy. Mm-hmm. You
and as natural.
A child, 100% natural. I've never spoken to somebody who said that, like, I've never, like, just touched myself. And not even, like, in a masturbation way. I wasn't masturbating as a child. I know people who were. And it was just natural because you found something that felt good, so you kept doing it.
Yeah.
Even if you didn't have an orgasm. Mm-hmm. But, you know, people, you know, you got to penis, and I was told that boys or people with penises like put their penises in things
mm-hmm.
when they're kids, just because it's like a thing that sticks out of their body that looks like it can fit into stuff. And then you know, like,
the logic is pretty simple, yeah.
Like, why wouldn't you, like, at that point, right? But that isn't considered hypersexuality. Masturbating as a child isn't considered hypersexual, and I don't mean like abuse.
Right.
I just mean naturally exploring your sexuality at a young age. I personally don't feel like there's a cap on when you begin, like, if when you begin exploring your body yeah. as a child. Like, I feel like that just happens when it happens. It could happen when you're 6 or 7 or 8. It could happen when you're 15.
Yeah.
It just happens when it just hits. Sometimes it just be fucking hitting.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just be having titties and you're like, what the fuck are these? Like, you know,
your bubsies, do you mean?
Yeah, my bubsies.
This is a Caribbean genitals only podcast. So you said penis earlier. I think you should have said buddy. Like,
buddy. That's no, excuse me, not Caribbean. That's like Jamaican. All right. Let's
but
like.
Bubsies is not Jamaican.
Prior to this, me and Sam were talking about like Twitter and how Twitter can be very groupthink. If you want to. Talk about that guy.
Oh yeah, so I think Twitter is just a place where, because of the fact that there is a metric associated with it, and that metric being likes and retweets, and as people who talk about just like the science of the brain, like, that shit does feel good. Like, it feels good to get a retweet, it feels good to get engagement from other people. And so this, coupled with the fact that there's such a short character limit, and the fact that if you say something that is jarring to people or upsetting the status quo, or maybe even just something that they agree with, you're going to get that kind of engagement, and there's no impetus to actually go deeper. So saying something like, we don't talk enough about hypersexuality and trauma, is going to generate that kind of reaction, because, I mean, that's true. Do we talk about hypersexuality at all?
No.
Like, it's really not something that's very widely discussed. Sexuality is something that is just now becoming widely discussed. I don't think anybody in my life would be comfortable if I had this podcast 20 years ago, mm-hmm. myself included, if I was existing in a different time frame or whatever. So we don't talk about sexuality that much. So for sure, we don't talk about hypersexuality. I know when you were doing the research for this podcast and you asked me a question, I quickly looked up hypersexuality and it was like, it's extremely understudied. So mm-hmm. yeah. For sure. And then another thing that we don't talk about that much is trauma and sexual trauma. And I don't really follow white people on Twitter that all that much. So we mm-hmm. don't talk about traumatic things that happen to Black people and Black AFAB mm-hmm. people and things like that. So mm-hmm. it's like, yeah, this is something that should be discussed. But just leaving it at that one sentence is not doing much for the conversation, especially because, so there's like that one person who tweeted it in the first place and it was like, yeah, sure. But for the people who keep doing it, I question if they're doing it because they actually want to have the conversation, or if they're doing it because this is a pattern that's been demonstrated and you've seen the fact that someone else has gotten social media attention off of this, and now you're doing the exact same thing to get social media attention off of it. Because, I mean, I joked earlier being like, no tweets have information, but yeah, you're right. We do do threads. Most of the threads that we do on Twitter are things that we talk about on this show. And interestingly enough, we don't have that many followers on Twitter, but those threads don't do very well because I don't think that people are actually seeking out actual information on Twitter. So maybe that's just like a fault of the platform.
Twitter's good for fast bites.
Yeah. I would hope from what people do, like every medium has a purpose and every medium mm-hmm. has a benefit. And mm-hmm. yeah, Twitter is really good for like quick bites. And I would hope if you're someone who's like actually looking to engage with information and deepen your understanding of sexuality and Black feminism and all the kinds of things that we talk about on this show, that you would see these kinds of things on Twitter and be like, oh, okay, let me move it off Twitter and onto a different platform, which is kind of like similar to what I talk about with lateral reading a lot, is just like continue to do research on the information that's presented to you, because it's only just going to make you a more knowledgeable person. And you're not going to get on my nerves that much.
True. And present the information back. Like, just give it back to the in the same place that you started.
Yeah.
You found this vocabulary here, because that's what I think that those tweets are good for. It's like, okay, cool, hypersexuality and trauma. Now I have these two words that I can Google, I can research, and when you do find that research, you find that there's so much more to it than simply hypersexuality and trauma.
That's a great
And there's
point.
So much more to it than just hypersexuality, because even just the word, the language surrounding it is, it's different. You know, I'm going to get into that.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, because right now it's like, how much is too much? How much sex?
Never too much.
Sex. I personally see hypersexuality not as compulsive sexual behavior. Compulsive means like you don't have control over the situations to some extent. You're just like constantly fulfilling your desires by any means, regardless of who you hurt, what you hurt, you're just going for it. That's compulsive. I see it as excessive when a person has access, and that's a key part too, has access to safe sexual means, but engages with multiple partners unprotected and untested. I think partners as a symptom is outdated, as having multiple partners inside and outside of a relationship is not excessive or something to cause alarm. It's the compulsive factor, the urge to and acting out on, regardless of the setting or what harm it does to you and those you care about. And that's the similarity that I see between this and any other more studied, validated addictions like substance abuse. That's you, regardless of where you are, you're going to drink because you need that drink, or you're going to do these drugs because you need to do these drugs. But drinking in itself isn't addictive. Isn't an addiction. Smoking weed is an addiction. Doing coke is an addiction. It's the compulsiveness of it that becomes that addiction.
Yeah.
And also, I want to be light when I say multiple partners are protected and untested, but I just want to say that because it becomes very risky behavior when you and your partners are not getting tested and you all have multiple sex partners. It does become risky because it increases your chances for all kinds of STDs, both curable and incurable, and spreading STDs as well, because you can always be asymptomatic.
If you do have access, which you mentioned earlier, but I want to highlight that.
If you do have
again,
access. Because some people don't.
Yeah, exactly. And then, are you hypersexual or no? Like, nigga, I just don't have condoms in my neighborhood. Like, I don't have health insurance to get tested.
To constantly get tested. Yeah. It's like if you have the means, but you still choose not to. If you don't have the means, then that's still something that I would think you would have to really deep dive into. But that's a whole nother world.
It's pathologizing poverty.
Yes.
Point blank period. If you're not assessing all of the factors, then you're just talking about this one thing that's causing it.
Yes, because there's so many. It's people who are why do people in poverty be having babies? Because they be fucking.
Yeah, just like access, you, exactly.
But they don't have access to all of the things that we have access to, like Plan B. Plan B ain't cheap.
Yeah,
condoms are not cheap, especially if you're allergic to latex. Condoms are not cheap.
Yeah.
Health insurance is not cheap.
Yeah.
Getting tested, free testing in New York is a privilege. That doesn't exist everywhere.
And also getting tested in an environment where you feel safe and not fucking this doctor is gonna hate me.
Tell my fucking family.
Exactly. Or try to spill my tea or some shit like that. Like,
there's a lot to that part. So I'm not knocking people who definitely don't have a lot of access, because it is what it is. Also, I personally believe that this is based on Christian ideals.
Yeah.
I know growing up as a Christian, I went to a private school, Episcopalian school, for 3 years, and it was always don't masturbate. If you masturbate, you're going to hell. Why are you going to hell? Because you're spilling your seed on the floor and you're not getting somebody pregnant. But then you got to be married to have sex. So then they would consider somebody who is masturbating, you know, in general, masturbating or having sex outside of marriage to be like, oh, this person has an issue with sex.
But they're just honestly, being like human.
They're like actually like existing
yeah.
like humans prior to religion. But I think that is a base for the word hypersexuality, not sex addiction, but hypersexuality. Because I think that sexual addiction is very valid.
Mm-hmm.
But hypersexuality and sexual addiction do not seem synonymous to me.
Mm-hmm. I get that.
Growing up in the media, I see like
mainstream
famous
media.
Yes, yeah, so we just had this fucking conversation. Not even just the mainstream media. Let me say the growing up with the entertainment media, like okay. entertainment platforms, like radio stations and like MTV kind of stations or whatever. I saw a lot of famous men come out as sex addicts.
Mm-hmm.
Most notably, Eric Benet. And I wonder how gender roles play into this kind of diagnosis. I don't really know how it does because I've never personally seen in the entertainment media many or if any women come out publicly as sex addicts.
Good point.
I can't think of one off the top of my head, but I can name several male entertainers who have. And I don't know if that's because they just not spilling their tea.
Mm-hmm.
Or if because they don't consider their behavior to be sexually addictive, they consider their behavior to be completely normal. And these men are just trying to cover like their normal behavior, but they don't want to be seen in the media as like absolute thoughts. So they're like,
like, you know, I don't know because I don't know their situations.
To me, it feels like a cover for I cheated because I'm actually True. Not monogamous, but monogamy has been compulsory as a per society for a very long time. So it's like, oh, I cheated because monogamy is not for me. How do I actually justify this? I'm addicted to sex. I don't know if it's actually that, but it seems like a
How
seems like
know?
A reasonable fallback. Yeah, you can't know.
Eric because... Benet, if you listen to this podcast, can you just tell us what was
Imagine
really going on?
Imagine that nigga
on.
Loves this show. Because there be people where you're like, oh, you listen to this? You
yes,
never said anything. Like, it's just fucking love... Eric Benet. I love these shows. They taught like... me so much about my life.
And then just,
why am I making that his accent?
I don't know. I don't think
I don't
that's
know what
he sounds
like. Yeah.
But I don't think it's that. I just don't think it's that.
And then he calls into the voicemail. What do you mean I don't sound like that?
You fucking new pieces of shit. But in like in the grander scale of sex and relationships, you can have 10 partners that you just have sex with. And that I don't see that as an addiction. I see that as simply what it is, you having 10 partners that you have sex with.
Yeah.
I know me as when I was younger, I've had my personal moment. Possibly, because I also am very wary of self-diagnosing myself. Like, mm-hmm. I don't like doing that. But I've had a moment where possibly I could have been diagnosed with like a sex addiction mm-hmm. when I was 16. And I think a psychiatrist might have said that, but it wasn't like a major diagnosis. It was just like, oh, also this thing, like, you know, a little check mark. But in the grand scheme, it was depression and anxiety. But it was because I was having sex
as a coping mechanism
for several things, like not just trauma. I think trauma played a little part, but also like my gender identity, like me trying to affirm that I wasn't a man, even if I wasn't a woman. So having sex with men and me trying to affirm that I wasn't a lesbian. So having sex with men. But the reason why I would say was more compulsory.
Yeah.
Was because I was doing it very unsafely mm-hmm. and I was doing it with untrustworthy boys and men.
Right.
As me as a child having sex with men. Mm-hmm. But I think that was more of attention seeking behavior and sex was the intention that I can guarantee. Mm-hmm. I think if I were to have found another form of attention that wasn't sex, I probably would have taken that over sex. But niggas wasn't trying to show, you know, a little transgender, little thotty, no love like that. Yeah. But I think that's also where there can be an issue. Like, is it hypersexuality or is it just simply attention seeking behavior? They can go hand in hand with each other, or they can be completely separate.
Could be a lot of things, right? Even like risk seeking behavior is another thing where it's like, I'm having risky sex on purpose.
Mm-hmm. Because the reward center is just lighting up in your fucking head.
Yeah.
Or you know, it's just so many things. And I think that's one, I mean, it's understudied to begin with, but I think in order for it to be studied, it'd be so many facets that need to be studied for it to really be completely studied. And I just also want to note that this diagnosis is not in the DSM. Mm. It's a diagnostic manual. It's used by psychiatrists, psychologists, people who diagnose people with mental disorders. It's exclusively for mental disorders, personality disorders, and addictive behaviors. It has like basically criteria, and you have to meet this many out of this many criteria to be diagnosed with this thing. Right. Is it a sure thing? No, but definitely sex addiction is not in there. So being diagnosed as a sex addict, not that the DSM makes it valid, but the DSM makes it more readily researched and treatment more readily available. But there's so many societal factors, cultural factors that play into what a sex addiction is and what hypersexuality is. It's like, I don't think that it'll ever end up in that book, and that's okay with me.
You know what's funny about that? Who the fuck diagnosed Eric Benet? Like, was it ever in there? This nigga was on WebMD.
It was never there. It was never there. It was probably like his PR was like, yo, just say you're addicted to sex. And he was like, okay. And they released a statement or some shit.
It's not like how being like transgender or not transgender, being homosexuals in the DSM, and then it was removed. Sex addiction was just never ever there.
Wait, so I'm just like googling Eric Benet, and now I see an interview from 2012. I haven't watched it, but the headline is Eric Benet says he was, quote, never a sex addict.
And here we are.
Huh. I'm fucking weak, bro. Huh. It was all a lie.
Huh. But that was something that came out after it was said that he was cheating on Halle Berry.
Right, exactly. And that's the only thing you can say for cheating on Halle Berry, because that's before we talked about non-monogamy. How could you cheat on Beyonce? How could you cheat on Beyonce?
But it's like there's so many different levels to relationships that go outside of monogamy. And you can be in a monogamous relationship and not be a monogamous person. You just... Yeah. Unfortunately, sometimes they go to the ethical non-monogamy, and famous people will be taking the cop out of, no, I'm addicted to sex.
Unethical non-monogamy.
Oh, did I say ethical?
Ethical, yeah.
Oh, I definitely did not mean
niggas
that.
Niggas be like, I'm doing right out here.
This bitch, I thought I was doing wrong. It's ethical. No, unethical non-monogamy. Honestly, it's just an understudied phenomenon. It's not studied across cultures. It's not studied across gender identities. It's not studied across sexualities.
All of that is really important.
Because I definitely think the intersection between sexuality and gender, that you would find that people who are not heterosexual probably would fit more into the sexually addictive or the hypersexual behavior, because they tend to have more than one sexual partner, or people who are trans, or people who are just not like a cishet regular ass nigga, like they tend to have more partners.
Yeah.
And it's just because niggas just be knowing, we just be fucking woke, knowing that we don't have to do that. Like, we're not forced to do that.
Culture too. You had mentioned culture. Like, if you grow up,
yes,
in, even you, like personal culture,
other cultures.
Exactly. If you grew up in a Puritan family and another family, you didn't grow up in a Puritan family who was like, yeah, sure, it's fine to have sex. There's going to be two different outcomes in your life.
I was going to talk to you about my grandmother. Uh-huh. I don't know if I mentioned this on the podcast, if I mentioned it to you, if I mentioned it to anybody, but I found out that after she passed, I found out that only two of her seven children had the same father. I didn't know her last name was my last name. Mm-hmm. I thought that my last name was a married name. Mm-hmm. And then my father told me that in Guyana, if you are not married to the person that you have a child with, then you take the mother's last name. That's why we all have the same last name. And I was like, oh shit. But nobody's ever said my grandma was a hoe, that my grandma was hypersexual.
Yeah.
My grandma was addicted to sex. My grandma was obviously fucking, because it couldn't be that, you know, every time she fucked one time and had a baby by a different nigga. She was fucking different niggas and then was having babies.
Yeah.
And, but also that was her, you know, this was the 60s and 70s, her not having access in Guyana to safe sex means, or, I mean, she might not even wanted to, I don't fucking know, but.
Yeah. I mean, what's wrong with that? There's nothing wrong with having children and not be partnered.
Exactly. And I never looked at her like she's this wild hypersexual being. I had no fucking idea until, and I was so mad because we would have been chatting. Like, she used to talk to me about boys and stuff. And if I would bring a boyfriend around or something, she'd be like, I just want you to have kids so I can see him before I die. And I'm you might just die. But it would have been such an interesting conversation.
Yeah.
You was living your best life, but had you been in America, they would have looked at it as it was a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's culturally, it's different.
There's something really nice to hear about this, in that, when you said they all got, all of your dad's siblings got her last name. What a matriarchal society is that? I really enjoy that.
I was so amazed. I love my last name. I've always wanted to give my last name to my child, regardless of how I had my child. Mm-hmm. But now I feel like I have to. But that's cultural differences.
Yeah.
So I would say, before diagnosing yourself a sex addict, ask yourself, is that because of what society says, or do you feel like it is a behavior you can't control?
Mm-hmm.
Just really take a reflection and say, am I having behavior that is actually not that out of character? Or am I having behavior that is risky, that is dangerous to my health, that is dangerous to others, like any other addiction? Is it truly an addiction, or am I just truly afraid of what society will say about me having more sex than niggas who don't be fucking?
Mm-hmm. That was a really good deep dive, and I really appreciate you doing it. And I hope that folks at home, because I did have thoughts, it sparks a whole bunch of different kinds of ways that the conversation around what it generates thoughts on what quote unquote baseline sexuality even means, which I think is important to explore, and just what norms do to people. And what falling into a norm does, and how that is problematic, but also how that shapes your whole life in some ways. So, yeah, definitely if you guys have thoughts at home about hypersexuality or lack thereof, maybe that'll be the episode title. Write in. That was really good. Thank you.
You're welcome. That's a party on the weekend. That's a party on the weekend.
She loved a party on the weekend. She loved a party on the weekend. All right, now we're going to go into our next segment. That segment is called Fuck Me. It's about our sexual, romantic, and dating lives. And within that segment, there is a mini segment called Sam Presents Ass Media. That's my jingle for it.
I love it.
Thank you. Ass Media is a new segment and play on the term mass media, in which I give book, TV, podcasts, and film reviews that relate to sex, love, dating, and or gender. They are typically spoiler-free reviews unless I deem it otherwise necessary. So this week, I'm talking about Dating Around, which is an American reality web television series on Netflix. Have you ever watched Dating Around?
No, I'm after
that one season of 90 Day Fiancé I watched, I have been traumatized by reality TV shows. Well, so.
Dating Around is not at all like 90 Day Fiancé, but cool. I understand the trauma because there's a lot of shit going on in 90 Day Fiancé. But each episode of Dating Around features a single who goes on 5 first dates that are filled with flirty banter and awkward exchanges and hopefully moments of true connection. This is their synopsis, but I agree with it. Once the quintet of blind dates is over, the dater is tasked with picking one match who is worthy of a second date. The dating show takes an honest and compelling look at the real world of wooing potential mates. And even that, like the way it's written, it kind of seems like it's a competition or something like that. But there's no like end ceremony where they give out a rose or a drink. There's no like deliberating. Yeah, there's nothing like that. It's just like they show all 5 dates and then it cuts and then they show another date where it's just them with one of the people. Like it's very, it's not all like woo woo woo, which is what other reality shows are.
I guess it's just and like, oh, look who you chose. Shit.
Yeah, it's just like life, honestly.
Yeah, that literally is life.
It's well-edited life. So overall, I like the show because I enjoy love and dating reality TV, which you might have gathered if you listen to the show. But I uniquely like this show because it's low key and it's quiet, but it still somehow highlights the awkwardness of dating, the cute moments, the problematic moments, and the heartbreak in a subtle way that's not like, here's like 5 quick cuts. Like he said, what? Like it's not anything like that. It's just like, oh, that makes me feel a bit strange. And like them working through it, which is what happens in real life. So I'll talk about a couple of things. So one, the aesthetics of the show has always been on point. Last season, they did it in New York. This season, they were in New Orleans. So there's a lot of shots of New Orleans cityscapes and things like that, which is very nice, especially for people who have not been outside in a really long time. It's nice to see pretty outsideness. Because they're in New Orleans this season, there's a lot of New Orleans accents, and that shit had me wet because y'all sound good.
I've never even heard a New Orleans accent for real. So.
Really?
Nah, I don't think.
Oh, wow.
Fake.
Yeah, you're faking your phony. Yeah. There's really cute music selections. So one of the characters this season was an R&B musician whose dad was an R&B musician. And then at the end of the episode, they just played one of her songs and she sounded good.
Oh, nice.
I was like, aw. And there's like a Dominican girl and she reveals through her date that she loves bachata. And then her episode ends with bachata. So I was like, you guys took care in this. Mm-hmm. Also, the editing is quite seamless. So they always cut between 5 dates like really, really like artfully and seamlessly. So someone will be talking and then they'll like pan over a drink or something like that. And it's revealed that there's someone else there. So it always like bridges it together. So it's not weird. And then everybody just dresses really well on the show. So that's nice. I don't know if that's them or if that's like Netflix production being like, please don't look like crap.
Yes, because you're gonna be on like
yeah.
Please don't look like shit.
Exactly.
Because I've seen niggas on dating shows with like stretch out V-neck. So.
Oh my God, stretch out.
That was on a was that blind ever. Date?
Probably. It sounds like a blind date kind of thing. Sounds like a blind date type of nigga.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's a lot of themes touched on in this show and in this series, and I want to touch on some of the ones that stuck out to me. So one of the big ones for this season to me was consent. And I think it's interesting how consent or lack thereof comes up in dates in real life, but also in this show. So I appreciate those instances being in episodes to help even normalize thinking about consent. And I don't know if it was a theme that was more highlighted this season or if I'm just thinking about consent more. But I think I was thinking about consent very much last year, too. So I'm not sure. But I didn't want to go back and rewatch the first season. So here are some instances. So the first episode, there's a man who kisses and hugs without asking. He also called his date to make sure he got the right number, which I think you should never fucking do. That's a really big overstep. And then one of the women he kisses without asking doesn't kiss him at the end of the date, which to me is like a signifier of, did she want to kiss you in the first place or did she kiss you because you did that neck pull-in thing?
Yeah, she felt like she had no fucking say.
Exactly. So that's the first episode. Then the second episode features a man who stares quietly at his date, which led to his date asking, I feel like you want to kiss me but are too nervous. So like, it's slowly building a progression of what consent looks like. So the first guy, there was no consent. The second guy, it's like he's trying, but he's not quite there, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and then at some points in the episode, I think he did ask for permission, but I think that the first one was just him being like, I'm going to awkwardly gaze into your eyes. Then the third episode, there was like so much consent. And I will say this episode featured a Black woman lead. So the very first instance where she meets somebody, she's like wearing a nice dress. And the guy that she meets like puts his hand on her dress. And he's like, oh, wait, I'm sorry for doing that. And she says consent is key. Like she's literally like, let's talk about this. Then there's a man. Oh, God, I hated that guy. He says, come here to her when they're at the bar. And she's like, for what? And then he says for a hug. So I guess she kind of like goes in and she's like, I'm okay with a hug. And then he says like, and maybe a kiss. And she's like, no. And then she like backs away and she's like, I don't kiss on the first date. And then in the same episode, one of the sweetest moments in the whole season, she was pansexual. So she was on a date with a woman. They're like having an intimate moment and the date is about to wrap and they're about to go somewhere else. And the woman looks at her, but not for like such an awkward long time as the second guy. And she just says, can I kiss you? And she says, yeah, absolutely. And they kiss and it was nice and it was magical. It was interesting that that's the same woman who said to the man who said, I don't kiss on the first date, and then showing a different first date where she was totally okay with kissing. And that just made me think of the fact that like that is something that people use as a way of not a way to navigate consent, but not actually be upfront about it. And I wish that was even more normalized. Like, not I don't kiss on the first date or I don't fuck on the first date, but just like, I don't want to fuck you and I don't want to kiss you. And that people like need to start hearing that. And yeah, I just really like the progression that those three episodes were so different in that way. And hopefully people who are not people who think about consent like that, maybe that helped them to do so or made them start thinking about that. Another thing I really like that's kind of fitting in line is the concept of rejection or the theme of rejection in this season. I love the depiction of rejection in anything, and not because like I like making fun of people or anything like that, but because it's awkward and it's uncomfortable, but that's okay. And it's good to see what healthy rejection looks like, and it's good to normalize those kinds of things. I really appreciate seeing a show where people just openly reject each other in general, but specifically a show where women openly reject men and are not met with, fuck you, you're ugly, I didn't want you anyway, you're never gonna do better than me or anything like that. It's just nice. Like, I don't want to fucking see that when I'm trying to watch a show to not remind me of the bullshit that actually happens in the world. And I appreciate the care and the honesty that the rejectees take. So it's usually something along the lines of, this has been pleasant and fun and I just don't think we fit, but let me walk you to your car and have a good night. Like, it doesn't always have to be like, ugh, I would never date you or anything like that. Like, it's just really normal, natural ways of dating and ways of being, and it's nice to see that on television. Polyamory comes up in this season, and I wish it came up more. So there's one guy who's on a date with a woman, and she lets him know that she's bi or pansexual, and he says that that is a requirement for the women that he dates. And then he goes even deeper, and it's just like, I won't get into specifics, but he basically just wants a harem of women to like serve him basically. And that was really fucking creepy. So I'm like, oh, why is that like the one guy who's openly polyamorous on the show? And there's another person who talks about it in passing, who's just like, I might want a polyamorous or non-monogamous relationship in the future. But I'm thinking that I would really like for polyamory and non-monogamy to come up more in the show in general. Like, even in the synopsis itself, it says singles who are going on dates, but not everybody who is single goes on dates. Like, people in ethically non-monogamous relationships can go on dates. And what kinds of conversations would that spark with people? And then even more people like, oh, we're a couple and we're dating other couples. Like, what does that look like on television? And what kind of conversations does that generate? Culture, race, color, and class is another theme that I want to talk about. So there's a lot of interracial dates, but not that much talk about race. And I find that interesting. And I don't really go on interracial dates. So I'm curious as to, like, does that come up? You have any idea?
I've dated people who weren't Black, but no, to me, no. But I think because those questions, well, those kinds of conversations are very deep. And it's like, how deep you want to get on the first date. They can become deep. Usually they don't
end well.
Yeah, I mean, because, yeah, obviously. I think that's something that's very getting back to Twitter, like when people say, these are my boundaries and I make them clear and upfront very fast. I always talk about these things on dates. And I just question, do you actually do that? Or are you doing that so that people like give you clout? And if you do actually do that, like, how does that look? Because, I mean, that's important. Maybe that is something that somebody wants to do on a first date. But really, what does that look like? And how do you navigate that without the date just being a shit time? And it's not just like people on two totally different sides of the spectrum or whatever. Like, all white people are racist in the way that we are all entrenched in white supremacy. But it doesn't necessarily mean that you're on a date with a white supremacist or something like that. Yeah. You know, like, you can have that kind of conversation that needs to be had with a white person who thinks that they're well-intended and an ally or something like that, or liberal. And like, what does that look like? In addition to that, there's two Asian people who talk about colorism. There's one white person who randomly asks a person of color, did you grow up middle class? Or did you grow up lower middle class specifically? And I thought that was odd, and I've never asked anyone that in my entire life, and probably never would.
It's really,
and it's really weird
ask.
Given the dynamics that they were white and the person was a person of color. And yeah, I just think it's interesting that politics don't come up. And I don't know if that's something that like producers are like, avoid conversations about feminism, or
probably
if that is or if that is what people really do. Like, maybe people on Twitter are like, I always talk about this, but people in real life are like, I kind of just want to like have a good time with some drinks and want to get my mind off of the politics that I'm consistently entrenched with. Even the woman who was on the date with the man who wanted a harem, she was very obvious about the fact that she was not fucking with his shit. And I went on her social media and I could probably gather that she seems to be a Black feminist who was not with that shit, but she wasn't like, let me make this a teachable moment for this guy or anything like that. I like how PDA shows up in this show. So in general, I just like PDA in reality shows, but I really appreciate here that there's not an overload of PDA. So it's more few and far between. And I think that normalizes the expectation of not expecting affection on every date all the time, which is totally normal. But then there's one episode that has a lot of kissing and touching and PDA, and it's actually an episode with all queer men. And I watched that episode on the anniversary of the Pulse nightclub massacre by accident. I didn't know that that episode was going to be about that. But I was just like, it's really nice to see like queer intimacy between queer men. And there was like men of color in that episode and Black men in that episode. It's really nice to see that on the anniversary of an atrocity towards queer people and queer men. And that was nice. A little bit about casting. So the body image, in terms of body image on this show, I think that it could do a bit better. There's one short man who is on a date with women who are taller than him. I dig that. There was one bigger Black woman. I don't know if I would call her fat, but that's like getting there. But I don't think there was nearly enough fat people on the show. And there's also no folks with visible disabilities on the show. And this is something that I was thinking about last season, and the fact that it's still not coming to fruition this season kind of bothers me. In terms of race, it's extremely multiracial, extremely multilingual. In terms of profession, there's a wide array of professions, and there's a lot of chiropractors for some reason. I think that's good.
Yo, you said that, and I just put my back as soon as you said chiropractor.
We all need to date a chiropractor at least once. That's what that said to me. Like, I need more of that in the dating pool. In terms of gender, there's nobody openly trans or non-binary. I can see why that would be. Maybe that visibility might be uncomfortable or dangerous for folks participating or even just going on the date in general. But I don't know. I would like to see that navigated a bit better. And then there's one person who has a trans ex, and they say about their ex, he identified as trans. And I just want people to stop using that language. Like, I want people to just normalize saying they are trans instead of they identify as.
Yes.
In terms of sexuality, there was one pansexual person or bisexual. But given all of the bullshit that bisexual or pansexual men get, I would really, really, really like to see an episode with a bi or pansexual man and not have them be on a date with somebody who's like, what does that mean? Does that make you like somebody who's like very unaware and ignorant to it? I want to see an episode where a bisexual man is on a date with people and is not entrenched in biphobia, like just him having a good fucking time, because that's like something people need to see. And then lastly, last season, there was an episode with seniors, but this season there was no episode with seniors. And it's just like mostly millennials. And it seems like the 40 and up demographic was not represented. So that kind of sucked. There's also a three act structure of every date where they meet at a bar in a restaurant and they go to the table and they get food. And then if the date progresses, they're like, oh, you want to go get something? And they go to a bar again. And that happens every single date. And I'm like, oh, that's not how real dates work. But then also I kind of just want to like get out of, and this is something that I was thinking about earlier when I was dating earlier in the year. I want to get out of normalizing alcoholic-based dates or alcohol-centered dates because, one, not everybody can do that shit. And then, two, like, what does sober dating look like? And is that okay to engage with sober dates? I think it is. And I think we kind of, like, use alcohol as a crutch. And the show is, like, feeding into that. Like, how awkward, like, it's already awkward. How awkward does it look without the alcohol?
Yeah, it's like, do I want to feel that though?
Yeah, I mean, but if you don't, like, I would say like Netflix, remove it from the bars. If you are too not comfortable with that, like pregame a little bit,
yeah, by yourself,
and then see the person who's like loose with alcohol and the person who's like, oh my god, I'm too sober for this.
Could you imagine?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, yeah, it's also on TV, so yeah, that adds another level of, yeah. I think a lot of, that's a different conversation, but I think a lot of reality TV is fueled by alcohol. Mm-hmm. Like, what was that show? Love is Blind. There was like memes going around where they would always have a wine glass in their hand in every sort of scene. Because how do you get through this? How do you get through life in general? But how do you get through being in a house with random ass people and not be like fucking a little bit smiz?
True.
So yeah, that is my review of this season of Dating Around. No, it's a pretty popular show, so definitely write in to me and let me know how you were thinking about this season. Also, I talked about the first season of Dating Around on a podcast called How'd You Meet? That was a pretty fun conversation, so I'll definitely link that so you can see my trajectory of how I feel about Dating Around. And yeah, it's really short. It's something that you can clean up to or something like that. Or like do your hair too, paint your nails too. The episode's like 20 minutes long and there's like six. But what's this going on in your life?
So, you know, the last episode that we did, we had that like epiphany about like libido. And then it's funny because I mentioned like hypersexuality and then how, oh, the medication might have calmed down my libido. But then that also informed me trying to do this episode around hypersexuality. But so to re-inform what I said, I don't think the medication like helped me with hypersexuality. I don't think I was hypersexual. Also, but considering that the whole time I was on medication, I was in relationships.
Mm-hmm.
I just got out of the relationship one like February, March. So this is like my first time being out in the world and on medication. And I think I'm just fucking like responsibly because of the things that I've learned. And I think even before the medication, actually, I don't think that I was like wildly like, I mean, I was horny, like don't get me twisted, but I wasn't wilding for respect. Like I did not have like some kind of sexual addiction.
Mm.
I was smart about who I chose to have sex with. And maybe sometimes I could have been smarter about who I had sex with, like who I chose to, like after very big red flags, like wavingly large, like the American size, parade size red flags, I probably could have stopped on some occasions, but I don't think that was a symptom of hypersexuality. I think that was a symptom of attention seeking behavior.
Hmm.
And just me just wanting to be around somebody. So, I mean, I'm still fucking and I'm also heeding red flags. Right now, I'm weaning off of medication. I'm weaning off of the benzodiazepine I was on, the Clonopin. It's very fucking strong. And niggas be having withdrawal. So that's been fun. But in the middle of that, I'm like, all right, cool. If I want to try to live a life without being dependent on medication, because right now I realize that that medication specifically, there was a dependency, a physical one and a mental one. Then what else can I do to ease my anxieties and to ease stressful situations. So I specifically wrote that I'm attempting to let go of trying to fit triangles into squares when it comes to dating. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of my stress is related to dating. Mm. Of course, I have stress in my job, stress in life, I have stress in my dog constantly having seizures. So the one thing that I can control is dating. And I've began to say, okay, cool. The moment that I really begin to feel uncomfortable, even if I don't plan on being in a relationship with this person, if I couldn't even see myself being in a relationship with this person at any point in time, then I feel like I probably shouldn't be fucking you. That's okay. Me personally, because I feel like that means that there's a part of you that makes me uncomfortable. Mm. One of the last guys, a firefighter that I was sleeping with, I looked to him for comfort and he just said something that just sat with me very wrongly. And when I dropped him off, I just cried in the car. So it was like, if you didn't have the answers, you just shouldn't have the answers this way. You didn't have to talk, you know, men just be talking sometimes. And after that, I'm like, cool, you know, you're not it. And my pussy's gold and you don't deserve it. So we're just not going to have sex anymore. And I stopped. You know, I talked to him, but I just decided to not have sex because that was me. If I would have continued to try to have sex with him, it'd be me trying to just fit him into this shape that he wasn't and to continue to be in uncomfortable situations for the sake of like company and companionship, especially like in the time of pandemic where all we do is be in my crib. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, and you know, whatever. So I'm dating a guy now. And by the way, these are all like firefighter niggas. I'm just like firefighter that. But I'm dating a guy now who I don't feel like that, but I do. But I feel like it's the opposite. Like I'm trying to fit him into a hole of where my exes were. Because he is so much not like anybody that I've ever met. And I'm like, okay, so this has got to be something fucking wrong with you. And I'd be like, my exes did this and my exes did that and da-da-da. And he's like, my nigga, like, I'm completely, totally different person. Like, I promise. If I say I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it. And he called me, like, and, you know, we text. And I have to stop trying to fit triangles into squares. And just let people be who they are and take it for face value and go from there. And when I see that red flag waving, then I really have to take people for who they tell me that they are. That's just my current life. And that's just life in general. That's not just with dating as well. It's coworkers, with friends, you know, stop trying to make people who I want them to be to help me. Let people be who they are. And see if they still serve me in the way that I need them to. And if they don't, then they don't. If they do, then they do. And hopefully that can ease the anxieties that I have now, not taking anxiety medication. I was on it for a good enough period plus therapy to get through the barriers that I was having to treatment and healing. And I think that I am now focused enough, especially with a steady job, even though it was a crazy job, a steady job, that I can really focus on mindfulness and being present and stuff. So now we out here. We're out here just trying to chill.
Nice.
And I did not know how hard it was to chill. I did not know chilling had to be conscious.
Chilling effort. Is active, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
Ironically.
Like, I literally be sitting there like, oh my God, bitch, calm down. It's not that serious. I'm like, no, this nigga hates me because I told this nigga to wash his ass. I said, wash your booty hole. And he said, don't disrespect me. But he said he was in the shower when he texted me. He's like, I didn't realize how it came off. Like, it definitely deserved an LOL or an emoji. It's like, I did not put that. He's like, and I'm very sorry because I did not mean it like, yo, don't disrespect me, bitch. And I was like, oh my God, I thought you were fucking mad at me. I thought you weren't going to come to my house anymore.
That's mad like, funny. Sorry.
It was funny. I thought that he was dead fucking serious. And I put it on Twitter like, damn, this nigga done fucked up. I just want him to clean his booty hole. Why straight men so afraid of their booty holes? And
little did I know, he was like, yo, I did not think that you would take it that way. And I'm like, Nikki, you put don't disrespect me. It's like, I meant like a LOL. And I was like, I don't even know you. Because that was our first date. He cleaned his asshole and I ate it.
I think that week, well, that was the purpose.
Yeah, that's what I said.
I think that is, there was a lot of things going on there. And I don't think that the only thing is that there was a lack of chill. So like you saying it is fine. Him saying no disrespect and you being like, wait a minute, like that is like, and then from there, instead of being like, this nigga hates me, it's just like, what do you mean by no disrespect? Like, that's the only thing that really needed to be massaged there.
Exactly. That's why at first I was like doing the not chilling thing, like actually like freaking out, like, wow, what did I do? I made it a big situation. And then he called me after he got out the shower, like, hey, I'm on my way. And I'm like,
oh, I thought I'd place disrespect upon your asshole. What?
Bitch, I was so confused. Even on the phone, I told him, I was like, I thought that you wasn't going to come. He's like, why would I not come? And I was like, you said don't ever disrespect me. And he's like, oh, and then, but that was me having to consciously chill because not everything deserves that level of energy. That did not deserve that level of energy. That could have just been a conversation like, hey, by the way, if you're gonna do some shit like that, like put LOL, like, because I took that seriously, or just not take shit seriously, like, I don't know, just gauge things with less subjective attitudes, just kind of look at things a little bit more objectively. And I think that if I force that into my dating life, I can force that into other aspects of my life, because my dating life is like the biggest part of my life right now. Because niggas trying to have babies. So that's it. That's all. Okay. I
duly noted. yeah, I'm really glad that you have a toolkit going on and you're actively cultivating it. And that's really nice.
Thanks, man.
Of course. Before we wrap up the show, we did not do current events this week, but I do want to take a moment to uplift the name of Olowotoyin Salu, a young Black teenager who was failed by her community and our flawed criminal justice system. What happened to her is unspeakable, honestly, to say the least, and I personally just do not have the space to unpack that today. But in the future, I will be doing a Fuck the System segment, the new segment that was debuted last week, on how the criminal justice system fails Black women who are survivors of sexual assault and domestic assault, and just how the criminal justice system fails Black survivors in general. So for more information on what happened to Toyin, you will find links in the show notes. And I just want to like give this mutual sense of collective grieving that I think is happening amongst Black women and femmes, and also just like say, like, I'm here for you in spirit, and I'm also feeling like quite bad about how shitty the world has been lately. I just didn't want you guys to think that we're like ignoring that or anything, given the nature of this show. So if this episode made you laugh, helped you learn something, or made you feel good, or question yourself in a good way, or positively moved you in any sense, please leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher, and let everyone you know that you love these hoes, and we appreciate all of you.
Yes. And last but not least, if you would like to follow us on social media, you can do so at Inho Uprising without the G on Twitter, Inho Uprising on Instagram and Facebook. You can join our Facebook community by searching Inho Uprising, CUMMUNITY. I did not Queen Latifah it this time. And head to Inho. Nah, that's like I already did it twice. Like it's a little too much. Yeah. And head to InhoUprising.com to sign up for weekly goodies via our newsletter, pay a hoe, and check out merchandise. If you would like to follow me, Rob the God, you can follow me at Pubiscus, spelt the way it sounds, on Instagram.
A lot of room for error there, but it will be in the show notes to help you out.
And then my Twitter is Robbie the Body. Robbie the Body. On Twitter. And my OnlyFans is onlyfans.com/BBYBOIROB.
You can follow me at SlamRid on Instagram and Twitter, and you can follow me at Carmen San Diego on Instagram for travel and food photos, and all of that will be in the description for this episode. Have a lovely week, folks.
Please. Have a lovely day.
A lovely, lovely day. Lovely day. Lovely day. Lovely day. Lovely day. Oh,
damn. Not everyone continuing. I was fucking going out of air. We got to end the fucking show.